You're listening to Radio Golf Show.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a special edition of Radio Golf Show, right smack in the middle of our German November. We hadn't done a German show for quite a while, and we kind of planned a all-German November, and we're in the middle of that. We got two more episodes in German coming this month, one on Monday with Christian Lampfermann, who was PGA of Germany Coach of the Year and who is a terrific coach in the youth department. But today we have the man from down under, Mr. Laurie Montagu, who's been with us a number of times. He has just published a book called The No BS Guide to Buying a Better Golf Swing. And I think we all know what BS stands for. The book is came out just a few weeks ago, I guess, October, middle of October. Yeah. Is available on Amazon here in Germany. $13.77 is the price tag. You order it today, Friday, it'll be there on Monday. It's 158 pages. It's written in English, but it's written in a beautiful, simple English that makes it fun to read and quick to read. And it's just a pleasure. I really, really enjoyed it. Before we start, I want to say two more things. We've been hit here with what's called a stratospheric polar vortex, meaning today it was -8 Celsius in November, which is rather unusual for the lowlands of Lower Saxony, which are now the frozen tundra, but obviously it has to do with climate change. We're big advocates of sustainability, and we would encourage everyone to contribute their own way. I mean, buy water in glass bottles instead of plastic bottles, organize a flea market at your golf club, and get rid of those 20 polo shirts in your closet that you never wear anyways, and sell them or trade them with somebody there. There's many things to do. And finally, next week on Tuesday and Wednesday, a group of young soldiers that I have spent 18 months with are going into their two-day written exam at the International Chamber of Trade. Today was our last day, and I just want to tell them that they're great guys and that they've been a pleasure to be with, and they're going to do well, and they're going to enjoy the examination, and they better fucking pass. So that's it. With that, welcome back to the radio, Mr. Laurie Montagu. How are you, sir?
Yeah, Frank, I'm fine, mate. Thank you, and thanks for having me again. It's always good to see you, and like I follow your stuff closely, and I love your discussions that you have around in and around the golf sphere. You know, a lot of people in the business, and they've all got something interesting to say. Well, most of them do.
Yeah, most of them do, and including the guests that make it happen. Now, this new book of yours, The No Bullshit Guide to Buying a Better Golf Swing. When I saw the title, I was, yeah, because, you know, it's in your face title. How did it come about? It's without going too far ahead, it's not really controversial, but it cannot be the favorite book for your fellow professionals who are out there teaching. Can you start there?
Yeah. So the title itself, I always had the no BS title in the back of my mind. There's a very famous marketer in the United States, Dan Kennedy, and he published a whole series of books, the No BS series of books on things around marketing. And I read those books, and I just liked the practical way he went about teaching marketing skills. And so it was always something I'd love to, you know, put together a book on that in golf, you know, my experience of 40 years traveling all over the place and being close to it, and then going, you know what, I need to put this book together and talk about the thing that people have pain with the most in golf, which is their golf swing, making progress with their golf swing. So, when I thought about all the things I could write about, and then I wanted to create a book, my last book, as you know, was more directed towards parents and coaches for junior development, but this one was more me and the years I've had it being around adults mostly, but not necessarily all about adults. But the struggles they have, the trials and tribulations of learning to swing the golf club and or learning different types of skills, and then transferring them to the golf course. And what really motivated me more than anything is just in the last few years on social media, seeing more and more stuff coming out, and it's regurgitated stuff. It's stuff that's been talked about forever, but it's brought out again. So there are these cycles that, golf's going through, talking about the same stuff over and over. But at the end of the day, we're not addressing the main problem, which is, there's this thing about growing the game. What we're doing is we're growing golf swings on golf tees. It's what I call factory golf, Frank. It's just people lined up on range mats, pounding balls out into this big flat area, and then thinking that at some level that's what golf's about. That's not what golf's about. Golf's about playing on the golf course and learning the art and the skills of playing the game. So for me, I thought, I've got to get people from the lesson tee out onto the golf course. And for that to occur, we've got to be able to fast track, if you will, the process of learning. Because human beings, by their very nature, are perfect learners. We don't have problems learning things as long as the information that's presented to us is presented in a way that's helpful and meaningful and actually relevant. And that's not happening enough. I think too often, a lot of professionals in my industry are grandstanding. They just stand there, beat their chest, and go, "Look, I'm the pro. I know best. You need to do this or that." And you get people stuck on driving ranges that have got next to no time to work on their game. They're busy people with their busy lives, and so when they do get to work on their game, in a lot of cases, they're probably not working on the things they should be working on to be able to make progress, move from the lesson tee to the golf course where they can play and enjoy themselves. A lot of people, when they stand on that first tee and there's a few people watching them, Frank, as they're going to tee off, they're still in a stage where, because they've been focusing so much on how to swing the golf club and not just playing the game, not just trusting themselves, they'll get up there and screw it up and hit bad golf shots, and that level of trauma is carried on. And so, they never really make the progress that me, in my case, what I'd love to see is the more people playing and playing a little bit better than they do.
Right. I think one of the biggest things, and I don't want to interrupt, is and you kind of mentioned it, is that the first thing to realize is that everybody learns differently. Everybody
You
is a
bet.
different learner. But everybody has to go through, and you have a wonderful diagram in there, which is two circles and then a little imaginary wall that you have to break through to trust yourself.
That's it. You got it.
Can we talk a
Well,
little bit about
yeah, we can.
different learners?
Yeah, because that's people aren't getting to that place. They that the first level of that first stage of learning. Now, Frank, there before I go any further, there are a number of theories on learning out there. So the theory that I've presented in the book, which was sort of came out of research in the 60s, is still very solid. And essentially, there are three stages to it: the cognitive stage, that first stage where high thinking stage. I'm thinking about what I'm doing, but I can't do it. And then the associative stage where I can now I can do it, but I can only do it in certain places. Like I can hit the ball really nicely on the driving range a lot of the time, but when I get on the golf course, I'm not nearly as good. And then the autonomous stage where many of the best players get to, that is elite amateurs and professionals, the stage where I forget that I know. I don't have to think about it anymore. I don't. So even though you see these guys rehearsing their swings before they walk up and hit the ball, they're really at the stage of not thinking too much about how to do it. Where a lot of golfers, what we would call average players, are still too much in the thinking stage and not the trusting stage. And so that's why that little wall is put there. It's It's that's the thing that gets in the way. There's too much cycling from cognitive to associative level. In other words, you can see the loop in it in the illustration. It's kind of like a loop, and they never break through.
Right.
And it must be so frustrating for people, because you know me. I work with people like almost every day of my life, and have done for a long time. So I'm on the tee doing it, and I'm wanting to help people to achieve their goals. And I say that I'll make that point again. Their goals, not my goals. My goal is to help them to achieve their goal. If that means sometimes that I have to help them to get clarity about what that goal is, I can do that as a coach rather than, say, a golf teacher who might be just literally programmed to stand on a tee and just give golf swing lessons one after the other, what I call factory golf, because it's an inputs and outputs like a typical factory. You walk in, you have this input, you walk out.
Cookie cutter,
But you're not necessarily going out onto the golf course and playing better, playing being the operative word, Frank. So I just had enough of seeing it and seeing the same stuff in social media circles being pushed out there that's been out there for years. And but we're not, I'm glad you brought up the learning process part, because that is where it's at. I mean, for all of us, it doesn't matter whether we're learning to ski or whatever we're learning to do. There's a process we're going to go through. Well, a lot of people that actually play golf, Frank, in my experience, have been very accomplished at other things in their life. I mean, really accomplished. And yet they get to golf and then they're overwhelmed by thoughts of how to do it, how to do this, how to do that, move the knees, move the feet, and all these fancy terms that have been incorporated into it that don't need to be there.
That
Right.
scares people away immediately. And
Well, that's the grandstanding part where some pro beating his chest going, I've got all the certifications in the world and I speak this
language.
double speak stuff, right? That people go, I don't even know what I'm talking about. And some of them charge a lot of money for it. So you end up walking away with light pockets, but what have you really got at the end of the day?
Speaking of these fancy words, when I hear cognitive stage and associative stage and autonomous stage, it doesn't really scare me, but it kind of like, what is that? And in your book, you describe the cognitive stage as the conscious incompetence. That makes a lot of sense to me, that word, those two words. The associative stage as the conscious competence. And then the autonomous stage, where, as you said, you find the really good players and the best players in the world, is the unconscious competence.
I had to put that in there because it gives clarity to that model. It comes from another model, but we can use that and incorporate the two and go, oh, okay, so now I can make it. Some people go, oh, I get the cognitive, aspect of it or the associative aspect of it. But when I say it that way, it helps them to understand at another level, right?
And when you hear a top player being interviewed on TV after he shoots 62, 63, 64, to describe his round, not once does he mention his golf swing.
No, not really. No, you
Right? I mean,
hardly
he
ever
talks
hear that.
about
No.
being in the zone or in the flow, and that's where you get. And when you talk about this comes from a different model, there are so many things, and we've had discussions with musicians here on the show who also strive to get into that flow stage like top athletes, and really the way to get there is the same. It's just a different medium. It's just golf and music, sports and music.
Yeah. Well, it could be anything. It could be walking,
Exactly.
Frank, right? Just walking from one place to the other, and you don't realize you've walked there until you're there. You could be walking to the front gate to check the letter in the mailbox, and your mind's somewhere else, and your feet take you there,
Well, the older
right?
you
So
get,
we.
every day I walk back to my car and double check if I really locked it.
Yeah, but those are the sort of things that have to happen as well.
Those things have to
You
happen.
know, little checks and balances that we have to have, especially as we get older.
One thing, and I personally never took a whole lot of golf lessons. When we get a new pro at the club, I'd go and spend some money just to make him feel welcome. But I've talked to a lot of friends who are teaching pros. And they tell me, they will get somebody on into their hut or wherever they're teaching, and they'll try to make some changes, and we'll talk about the different levels of changes also, I hope. And then they try to fix something, and then the guy goes out or the woman goes out and tries that new thing, and then they watch him walk across the fairway 2, 3, 4 weeks later, and they're back to doing the old things.
Yeah.
Can that be blamed on this? And that's one thing that's always bothered me from the first time I picked up Golf Digest magazine, are these tips and these quick fixes. Do this, and that's the secret. And maybe Ben Hogan's responsible for that because he said he found the secret, but there really is no secret. How should, and if we talk about the average golfer that takes the game seriously and tries to get better, but doesn't have the time, maybe to practice a lot, how should somebody like that deal with a quick fix or a just a tip that he sees on TikTok or whatever? Should he even look at that?
That's a great question. Before I answer that question, I want to ask you a question that relates to it. I imagine that there are quite a lot of listeners to your radio show that are live in Europe, and in skiing season, I'm not a skier, but in skiing season, they go up to the Alps, up into the Alps, and they ski, and maybe they've been skiing since they're a kid. And I don't think that they'd be going to a skiing magazine looking for tips on how to ski better. I think that they were introduced to some fundamentals on how to ski, and then they applied those to the slope, to where they are, the environment, and then the environment kept changing. It got more difficult as they got better. Fair?
Absolutely. I mean, that's why you have the red slope, the blue slope, and the black slope, and you work your way
Right.
up to, to
Yeah.
those
And we
things.
don't have that in golf.
We don't.
No, that's the problem right there. We don't have that. And yet, if you learn tennis, you'll learn basic strokes. You'll learn how to hit it back across the net. Before you know it, you'll learn how to slice spin it or do whatever you need to do. You'll be able to do those things. So, but golf, no, everyone's got a different opinion, a different way of doing it. And so the tips part of it is one of those things that for me is like it's like you've probably seen me of recent times talking a little bit about psyops and things like psychological operations. But I think marketing is a psyops exercise. I think that marketers, the main thing with marketing is to sell something, right? To put something in front of someone. And the underlying thing for golf is swinging a golf club, hitting a golf ball, you need golf equipment to do it. So the major manufacturers have got a vested interest in making sure that people are standing on a tee with their golf equipment, hitting golf shots. So the magazines are just continually putting out stuff that people focus on a bit of this, a bit of that, but never giving them a whole picture. What is the secret? You talked about with Hogan, talking about the secret. Well, the secret could be anything, but the mere fact that someone says there's a secret when it's basically just learning, it's skill learning, right? It's breaking something down that's complex into some more manageable parts and then stringing it together one bit to the next bit. Learning how to stand on the skis, like learning how to even put the bindings on, like learning at the very basic level. I read something this morning about the famous basketball coach John Wooden, and when people first came to him and started playing for him, the very first thing he taught them to do was how to put socks on properly and how to tie up their shoes properly. Now you've got these super elite kids that are coming that are amazing on the basketball court, but there's Wooden taking them right back to the absolute beginning and saying, you know what? If that sock is rubbing against that little toe of yours, you're going to get a blister. Or if that sock is loose on your heel, you're going to get a blister. And then you're not going to be at your best. So fundamentally, we've got to get back to the core elements that drive the game, if you like, the first principles.
Would for golf, would for golf the first principle be the grip?
So here's the thing about it. You're standing on the ground, right? So you have to stand on the ground to play, and you have to be connected to a club. And then you're swinging the golf club around your body and setting up a collision with a golf ball. So how you stand, yes, there are, aspects to that. Holding the club, absolutely. Many ways you could hold it. Some ways probably make the club function better than others. So any golf teacher can, worth their salt can pretty much teach that. So I'm standing on the ground, I'm connecting myself to a club, and then I'm basically swinging it around my body, connecting the ball. How hard can it be? But here's the thing. And this is especially the case where I am in Indonesia. A lot of people that end up coming to me that have had many golf lessons and had a lot of money spent on them or have spent money on lessons, when they come to me, they go, the grip's not very good at all. But worse than that, they're making full swings. They started by learning the game with a full swing. The most complicated thing you could do in the game is make that golf club go way up and behind you, swing at a very high speed, and then making impact with the ball, and then not knowing how to make small swings. So I think you'll find, Frank, that a lot of the people that are listening to your show, that the keen amateur golfer, and if you think about how many of them would have learned the small swings before they learned the big swings, probably wouldn't be too surprised to know that most of them are standing there learning a bigger swing first, and then somehow learning how to harness that big swing and then make it smaller and smaller, which is the reverse way of how it should be done. Make skills simpler to do, and then and make it grow from there. Make a little swing into a bigger swing.
Now you've been a PGA pro for more than 3 decades.
Yeah, four decades
Four
this year.
decades. Sorry. Well, you look a lot younger.
Thanks, Frank. Thank you.
Now, anytime. And you've seen the game change, and the golf swing change, and the equipment change, and everything. And I remember when I started, I guess it was just the time when the elite players, or many of the elite players, stopped lifting their left heel in the backswing. And the first guy I watched was, of course, Bernhard Langer, and he was one of the first guys I saw back then that really kept his left heel on the ground. Freddie Couples then came, and things like this. And you're close enough to both the youth. You deal with a guy who doesn't have much time to practice, and you deal with elite players. Where do you see the biggest changes in the way the golf swing has changed? Not the ball, not the equipment, but the swing. Is it a more athletic swing? I saw a wonderful piece that you did just recently, explaining the swing according to different body types. I thought that was fascinating.
Somato type rating. So skinny people and muscular people and people are a little rounder and a little heavier. And obviously they can't all swing it the same way. But I guess the thing about, and that is a little bit unique, but I think that with golf instruction today, there's more emphasis on the biomechanics and so on of the swing. But the average player, let's just take for a moment an average person who maybe plays, maybe they go to the driving range twice a week, and maybe they play on the weekend, and maybe they play, 30 to 40 weekends a year, let's say. The weather's okay, given, they won't play on the days when it's not so good. Now, think about that person's life and lifestyle. You've got a lot of people that will spend time, let's say, sitting at a desk. And we've talked about this before. They're sitting at a desk. They've got everything's in front of them, a little bit to the side. And so their range of motion in their chest is limited. They're not moving, they're not rotating very much. And the reason I bring this up is that when you mention professionals, it's like the difference between talking to someone who's an astronaut that goes and, flies in spaceships at up
Stratosphere.
in the stratosphere versus someone who's on the ground. Like it's so far apart, it's not even worth discussing. And so when we see these models that are presented, like someone swinging the club, Rory or whoever it happens to be, and then when we might see something on how much time they spend in the gym and something else on, what we're seeing is someone who's at the absolute, they're so outlierish, it's ridiculous. They're the 0.001% of golfers playing the game. They're almost statistically insignificant,
Non-existent.
non-existent, almost don't exist. And yet that's what's in front of people. And that's what's being presented by teachers. And so we get to the part about feet being on the ground, for instance. There's maybe that we see more of that than we used to see. But here's the thing. I've got this guy who's sitting in a at a desk, and he's got his lumbar spine, the lower part of his spine doesn't move very much anyway. And then his upper spine is not moving very much through the day. and he's either sitting at his desk through the day, and I'm not saying that's everybody, but let's say that's, a percentage of people, and then they're driving in the traffic for, 30 minutes, an hour each day. Again, they're not rotating very much, and then they get home and they sit at the meal table and they eat. Again, they're not rotating much, and they go out on the weekend to play, and they swing the club back, and their arm bends like this because this part of the chest is not able to rotate like the pros do. And so to keep the foot on the ground when the person cannot rotate very well doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I'd say that person will be a pretty bad golfer, unless, of course, they do spend a great deal of time at the gym and they are, a lot more flexible than the average person is. That would might be for them. Maybe they can do it. But these young professionals that we see, that's a different kettle of fish altogether. And so we shouldn't even be talking about them, quite frankly. They should not be. We should be seeing, if we're going to see a golf magazine article or something, Frank, being presented to the masses, it shouldn't be elite players like those people. We can learn nothing from them. Everything they do is at such a high level. So we've got to look and talk to the person that's the real person that's sitting there spending all the money on golf and wants to get something from the game. And quite frankly, they're not getting it. Now, I'm not saying everybody there. So some of my brethren are definitely doing a great job out there,
Yeah,
but for the most part,
absolutely.
there's a lot of people that are not getting value for money, in my experience.
How should that golfer that you talk about, how should that golfer, first of all, measure his return on investment? How should he measure getting better? By score, by joy? Everybody different.
Right. So it's different things for different people, of course, but you mentioned return on investment, and I do mention the book because it's not discussed. It's not discussed nearly enough. The fact of the matter is you have to extract meaning from this exercise. What are you going to get out of it? Well, yeah, you want to catch up with your friends and you want to play golf with your friends. It's a social thing for the average. It's a walking thing for most people, not here in Indonesia, where people are driving around in carts, but it's very social here in carts. So if you happen to be driving around in a cart, you can still be having a fun time of it. You're not going to play nearly as good as these exceptional players that are always being blasted in front of you and talked about constantly by whoever, whatever the spokesperson is online. You're not going to play like them. You're not even going to play a little bit like them. What you need to have is you need to be able to find a professional who can speak to you in real terms about what you can do based on where you stand, based on the level of investment that you have in the game, how much time, effort, and money you want to invest in the game, rather than try to sell someone down a river, selling them on a lesson package and they're going to rebuild your golf swing, but you can only practice one or two times a week if you're lucky. So you're never going to be able to do the reps to make those changes take place. They're never going to happen. And mind you, if you in my book where I talk about the complexity theory, the more things you have to focus on, the more overwhelmed your brain, your working memory of your brain becomes. This is also a problem. People get are absolutely taxing the heck out of their brain in terms of trying to process all this information, moving the body not just with one piece of information, but with more than one piece of information. So we're dealing with things when we deal with things at a fundamental level, like at the base level, at a beginning level. All too often, it's moving towards things that are far more complex than they should be, and too much stuff presented at once.
And there's so much noise out there,
My
but
God, is there ever?
there is
Jeez, yeah, it is.
on every front. But the investment by the golfer isn't just money.
Gosh, no. I mean, they're limited in their time. Most people, you are not like professional golfers, that's their business. They spend a lot of time at it because that's
They
what
have
they've
to.
chosen to do. And they're an exceptional, they're just a rare breed of people. But the average person is just fitting it in when they can around what they do. So golf for them is, and it's different things for different people, as I said before. And some people can invest more time in it, some can, and some cannot. But the thing is, Frank, you've got to find that golf teacher who can relate to you and what you want to get out of the game and can take you step by step through that process and explain to you what's going on. Because that's what you should be investing your money in.
Right. So you
And
don't
that's
have
not happening.
so he, I mean, here it's, you know, it's almost unheard of that you take a lesson from somebody else other than the pro at your club. And here in the most clubs, they only have one or maybe two pros. So maybe one should consider looking for a pro at another club that might, even though I'm playing here, this guy over there is much
You
more.
bet.
I don't have to join the club to take a lesson from him.
In the book, I mentioned that I'm not saying that you have to be not be loyal to your head professional, but you can get it. You can get an opinion from someone else about what you're working on, for sure. And if the pro can't handle that, then you've got to look at that situation, because that we don't know everything, Frank. We, you know, like I think sometimes professionals come across like they're just from their feet to the top of their head, they're full of information and they know everything. And it often gets sold like that, like that they're not wrong. But they're mostly wrong. They're mostly wrong. They have experience in something that they're quite specialized at, but that doesn't mean to say that what they're saying is absolutely right. It can't be when every person, if they've got six or seven lessons or eight lessons in the day, that's eight different people with eight different ways of experiencing the world. So how flexible can you be? And if you've got a really limited model, as in you're teaching most people kind of the same stuff, then there's a big hit and miss there. So from a probability point of view, you're not going to be coming out on top. The probability of success is probably pretty low.
And I guess once you find a teacher or a pro that fits you, that you're comfortable with, that you enjoy being with, that you understand, and who understands you, and he makes an effort to make you better and teaches you certain things to work on, it's really up to the golfer to go out and practice it
It is.
and improve it.
Right.
And
But
in your book is also, yeah,
can I
please.
just, there's a caveat, mate. The caveat is it's how you go about that. That's one of the things that I think is also a missing piece, is like the people don't know how to practice their golf. So
How
you
do
go and
I
have the
practice?
lesson. Great. Okay. Paid the money, had the lesson. Now you're going to go and practice on your own. So maybe you've got a little tripod there and you'll stick the camera on there and maybe you'll do those sorts of things, which is fine. Very helpful. But at the end of the day, you're doing most of it on your own. So you're limiting the feedback that you're getting is very limited. And then you've got to go back again and get checked to see whether what you were working on when he wasn't watching you or she wasn't watching you is whether you're on track with it or not. It would have to be one of the probably the as a way of learning something, probably one of the worst ways of learning something, I'd say. I would say golf's a long way behind the way other sports do it. You know,
Why is
and
this?
like top level coaches that you know, and not teachers here, a coach, someone who's holistically developing someone and working through a whole process of things like we've talked about in previous conversations, when I was talking about periodization and those sorts of things. But you know, in a lot of ways, professionals have to be able to do that too. You can't just be offering a golf swing panacea, like a, you know, this is the pill, fix this and you're going to be okay. Everything you do has to be learned. In other words, there's a process of learning involved, and there's a process where you're thinking about it and thinking about it less, and then thinking about it even less, and trusting it more. Well, most people aren't getting to that trust stage like we talked about at the beginning of our conversation. They're just not getting there. And I don't think that's right, because I think, you know, golf's an expensive game, and some golf teachers are charging a lot of money for the time. And just because you've got a big reputation and you've got a lot of certificates on the wall doesn't mean jack shit, actually. If you can't get that person to do one thing, transfer skills from where they are to the golf course.
And
Because,
then,
Frank, if you go and have lessons, isn't that what you want?
yeah, exactly. And then what happens? I mean, let's say you shoot regularly between 80 and 85.
But then you're a really good player.
You go, you can take any number. Then you go out, you go take a lesson, you work on some things, you go out on the course, you try those things, and all of a sudden you're shooting between 90 and 95. How does a player fight through that? Is it by proper practice? Because, you know, when you see, oh my God, I just took a lesson, I'm shooting 10 more than I usually do, I'm going back to my old stuff. that is not correct.
So that's a great question. One of those lessons that you spend $100 on or $200 on, you'd spend it on a nice practice net that you put in your backyard. Mm-hmm. And then when you go and have that lesson off the golf teacher and they tell you something specifically you've got to work on, you hit balls in the net and you do sets of reps into the net every day until that pattern starts to emerge. You don't go onto the golf course and try it out. And try is an interesting word because you hear that a lot. Though I'm, you know, the pro told me this and I'm out there trying it. There's no trying in this case.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do the reps. And so the reps have to be done in an environment that allows you to focus mostly on that. Mm-hmm. So the feedback you want is the ball's hitting the net and you're not seeing it fly down a fairway or into the trees or wherever it's going to go. You want to hit that shot and feel what needs to be felt in your body without being distracted by what the golf ball's doing. But if you go and have your lesson with the pro and then you go out and play with your friends in that afternoon and you're thinking about your backswing position that he's adjusted or she's adjusted, good luck with that, because you're not going to – there's no miracle here. It's just learning.
Right.
And we can't bypass the learning stage, Frank. I don't care how clever – it gets. Humans have to go through the learning process.
And the learning process is practice. And it's very important, as you write in your book, to document this learning in order to be able to measure your progress.
How else can you do it?
Well, that's for a lot of people, myself included, that's a very, I have to force myself to do that. I don't do that with pleasure or naturally.
That's fair enough.
Yeah, when somebody comes to me, no matter what it is, you know, you have to document it and write it down, and then you keep a log and you see where you are. I have to force myself to do this, and I imagine there's a lot of people like that don't do it naturally, but that's completely necessary to do that.
Frank, I suck at playing the guitar. But it's not because I don't have the resources. I have chord charts. I can practice strumming techniques. I can practice picking techniques. I can everything I need to be a competent guitar player, I have in front of me. I just got to do the reps and do them properly. That's all I got to do. But in golf, what's the chord chart in golf? What's the strumming pattern in golf? What's the picking pattern in golf? You know, you want to go and play the song without learning chord structures,
yep.
Learning how to move your fingers up and down a fretboard. That's what the problem is in golf. We somehow think that we don't have to do that. And yet the musicians that you've had on and people that you know, highly accomplished people in different things, have had to go through a process of learning.
Mm-hmm.
And yet in golf, go and find it. Apart from my book, go and find someone who's taking you through that process or even discussing it rather than just showing you pictures of how to swing it.
Right.
And then you've got to figure it out for yourself.
You also talk about the weakest, most important skill, which is the single biggest limiter in one's game. And when you fix that, obviously it provides the greatest improvement. What would be the most important skills?
It's going to depend a whole lot on the person. You already obviously know I'm going to say that. You have to drill down and you've got to think to yourself, what is it? Here's what it gets down to. To know what the weakest important skill is, you have to know what it is you want specifically.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just be generalizing something and say, I just want to be better at golf, or I want to be better at driving the ball, or I want to be a better putter. You have to get more specific than that.
Would it be, for you example, I want to move the ball from right to left. I want to be able to move the ball.
That's the beginning of it, you know. So, but how high do you want to hit it?
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, so you've got to describe it in terms of what it would look like first. Right. So think about it like this. It's an idea. You come up with an idea. Let's say, Frank, you say, I want to be a better golfer than I am. That's the idea. And then you go, what's the ideology? What is it? Let's get clearer on what it is that I want to be able to do. Really get specific about if I want that ball to move right to left through the air, what would that look like? And what would I need to understand in my golf swing that I don't currently understand to be able to do that? In other words, I'm going to need someone to help explain that to me. But you've got to walk to the tee wanting what you want, not what someone's going to tell you you're going to get. And my book, I make it very clear in there that a lot of people are going there almost like in a victim mentality, like, help me, I can't play this game. You solve all my problems for me. No, you have to know what you want. Be really clear on it. So we go idea, ideology, and then identity. You do it to the extent where it becomes part of what you do. You stand up there and you fully expect it to go right to left, and you're a little surprised if it doesn't. Now, there's no reason the wide world why people can't learn to play and hit whatever shot they want to hit without putting thousands of hours in, but just putting really directed hours in, like
Quality
really
hours.
specific hours. Absolutely. And that's why I added Josh Kaufman's model at the end of the book as another way for people to think about it. His 20-hour theory. It's good that you don't have to go out there and spend hundreds of hours, because in a lot of cases you're not doing a very good job anyway. I mean, for instance, let's say you go you're at the driving range and you have your lesson with the professional, and you're pretty happy. But and then you say, "Hey, pro, I'm going to stay and do some practice now. I'm going to work on what you told me to work on." And let's say you're working on, I don't know, a right elbow position and maybe a right wrist position, two things, very complicated. Like two things is quite complicated. One thing's easier, two's hard, three's nearly impossible. So you're thinking about your right elbow angle and maybe your right wrist angle, let's say. And you're hitting balls. And you pull a ball over onto the mat and you get whack. You pull a ball over and go whack. And you think, oh, I'm doing quality work. I'm here. I'm spending the extra time after I've had the lesson with the pro. But the thing is, you're watching what the ball's doing. And the ball's not flying the way you want because you're actually focused on something else. But now your brain is kind of being asked to think about two things. It's being asked to think about what to do with the golf swing and manage the complexity of that, and also manage what the golf ball's doing, because the ball's not flying the way you want it to. So even if you know, if you're saying, ah, but the pro said, don't worry about the ball flight. Of course, you're going to worry about the ball flight. So even if he says or she says, don't worry about the ball flight, just focus on the swing, you're going to worry about the ball flight because that's the big deal. And so that time you spent there is almost wasted. You'll get almost nothing from it.
But what if I go to 10 coaches or teachers or whatever and say I want to move the ball right to left, the first things you'll hear is you need a stronger grip and you need to close your stance.
Maybe so, depending on what you've got, Frank, right?
Well, and they'll tell that to everybody, not just me, but without even seeing me swing the golf ball.
So then maybe you're going to the wrong person. Maybe,
Got to
yeah, but
strengthen your.
maybe when you do your due diligence, like when you invest in something, Frank, and it's something where you're going to have to put a lot of effort into it, time and money, why would you just take the, some comment, some off-the-cuff comment about what you need to do? Wouldn't you want to do more investigation than that?
Of course you would. Of course.
Gather more information, like gather intelligence on the pro that you think you're going to do some work with. Like ask people, like maybe you've got three pros in mind and they've all got pretty good reputations. But I would be wanting to find out as much as I can about how they go about their business and what's their success rate look like with lots of different types of players. Because there are professionals out there who have phenomenal ability to make a lot of golfers better. And in the book, I talk about the matchup teacher, the teacher that actually has such a range of flexibility in the way they do things that they can move and work with you, Frank, and then a 75-year-old lady comes for a lesson straight after you, and they can work with that 75-year-old lady and get them hitting a ball. Then the next one's a 16-year-old female, and they can get her doing it better. And do you know what I mean? Like they have the ability to match up what someone needs to help them to achieve the goal that they're after. But I think it comes back to this thing, what is it that you want? And if you really believe in your heart of hearts that you want to be a right to left player, if that's your thing, then nothing in the world will stop that if you find the right teacher who is really, really process driven, not outcome driven. They're going to just keep you there, learning and learning and learning and learning till you break through those barriers and start being able to make the ball do what you want it to do. And
Well,
they're out there.
I think all of us want more control over the ball, golf ball. I mean,
Sure.
90%, 80%, 90%, I don't know how what the number is. I'm one of them. We stand over the golf ball and we really have no idea where it's going to go. I mean, sometimes
Right.
we do, but most of the
But that could change, right? That's the thing. Again, we're dealing with really intelligent people, Frank, that are very accomplished at a lot of things. Skiing, playing musical instruments, soccer, you name it, like all sorts of things that they've been exceptionally good at. Come on, dude. We come down to golf. Why is golf so hard? Because it's not being presented to people the right way, in my opinion.
This whole routine that golf is the hardest sport in the world, and the swing is as complicated as pole vaulting or whatever, you know. I mean, that's really just bullshit.
Well, it can be whatever you want it to be. I mean, the ball's not moving, so you got that going for you,
Yeah, you certainly do. The ball's
right?
not moving.
The ball's not moving. It's just there on the ground. All you got to do is move the club around your body
The
and learn
problem
to
is it's
make
round.
contact with it.
The problem is
But
it's
here's the
round
thing,
and
mate.
not flat.
I mentioned this before, though. If you, let's say, for instance, you're relatively new to the game and you go and you learn golf, and I'm just saying, let's just say, look at this scenario. And you go and you learn, maybe you send your daughter for lessons. And in the first, and you buy a package of 10 lessons. And you might be a dad who says, what should we expect by the end of the 10th lesson? If my daughter does 10 hours of lessons with you, and then she does what you say and she practices on top of that, let's say she does 10 lessons plus 2 hours a week of practice based on how you tell her to practice. So now she's going to do 20 hours of practice by and 10 hours of lessons. What could we reasonably expect that to look like? Do you think that's an unreasonable question to
No,
ask?
because I can see it in her piano lessons.
There you go.
100%.
Or skiing lessons, or tennis lessons, or whatever, but not golf.
I will ask you my personal situation and what I'm trying to f not really fix but more adjust is to find or to adjust my golf swing to the point where it still kind of works. With my body being less flexible and getting older and still being able to hit the ball halfway decent. This is what I'm struggling with and trying to work on, and I don't know how. Obviously, the older you get, you put on some kilos and everything, and I find myself that I'm trapping the ball more than I used to in order to get to the ball. Not a quick fix, but what should I work on?
I think one of the things we've got to take to our grave, that is, if you play the golf for a long time, you would want your body to be able to pivot in two directions, and you'd be looking for a maximal amount of rotation in two directions. That stops with people as they get older. And I'd say it's symptomatic of the cause-effect relationship here would be for a lot of people, they're just not very mobile. So even if you're walking, let's say you go for an afternoon walk, well, I mean, you're not really rotating your hips a whole lot, and you're not rotating your shoulders a lot. But then when you go and play on Saturday with your friends, you're asked to swing the golf club around your body and rotate your body, a fairly significant amount in comparison. So I would be wanting to make sure that I've got a substantial amount of rotation in two directions, going backwards and forwards. That'd be the first thing. Second thing I'd be wanting to make sure is that I've got.
Can I just comment on that one very
Sure,
quickly?
please.
Because
Yeah, of
that's what
course
I
we can.
started doing.
All right.
I think it was Mac O'Grady. When the guys first started going to the gym and all these things, he says, "You don't have to go to the gym. You take your chair and you sit on it, but you sit with your back to the TV. So you look the other way, the TV is behind you. And in order to watch TV,
You
you
got to
turn
rotate.
both ways. So that's how I'm
Yeah.
watching TV now to
Right.
rotate."
Okay. Sure. So you've got to be able to rotate in two directions. As we get older, we definitely don't. Especially through this thoracic area, the spine, this chest area where these shoulder girdles rotate around, it gets tighter and tighter and tighter. And that's not the only place it gets tight. Your, you know, extension of your elbows in this direction, these things get tighter. That the quads and the hip flexors get tighter. So we don't move very well. We and so if you're not going to be doing yoga every day, then you have to keep that in mind. So the idea of, say, for instance, as I rotate back, lifting my left heel off the ground kind of makes a whole lot of sense. Because on the follow-through, you're going to lift your right heel, assuming you're a right-hand golfer, right? You go backswing, my left heel is going to come off the ground to help me rotate further around. And when I swing down and through the ball and go the other way, my right heel as a right-hand golfer is going to come off the ground as much as I can get it. So I would say to start with, I want to be able to rotate in two directions freely. And if you need to know what freely looks like, go watch Bobby Jones. Swing it on, you know, go to YouTube, type in Bobby Jones and watch how freely he turned in two directions. And you go, ah, oh, but that's the hickory area. It doesn't matter. It's a human being with a golf club in his head, swinging the golf club and rotating his body fully one way and then fully the other way. So I think rather than watch some guy who's got his feet planted on the ground and is hardly turning at all, you know, that when they point you to that, like when the YouTube and the gurus on social media, you know, bring up some picture of Rory or whoever, again, freaks of nature. Let's not watch the freaks of nature anymore. Let them do their thing. Let's admire what they do, but they're freaks of nature. It's like when you go to watch soccer, football, where you live, you go to watch football. You can kick a football around like anybody can, but you're not going to be like, you know, one of the guys out there who's playing for, you know, one of the major teams. It's different. And so we're not getting presented with information the right way. We're getting, you know, we've got too much information that is pointing us away from being better at golf. And
It's
then
too
going and
much.
buying more equipment, you know, buying this and upgrading the driver because you want more distance, blah, 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 which is the marketing machine is working perfectly in golf. It's confusing the hell out of people. And then they have to make a decision about which way they're going to go. And they end up going buying a,
And then all
you know,
the
the XYZ driver, which cost them, you know, 800 euros. And at the end of the day, they don't play any better with it.
Wouldn't that be coming full circle for me? I start by my golf life by planting my left heel, and now I'm lifting it again. Wouldn't that be?
As I said, go watch Bobby Jones. Second thing I'd say, so we've got the movement of the body this way and this way, like going both two directions. How about, you know, good range of motion in the wrist hinge? Like you don't want to have your hands clamped on the club and you're swinging your arms back and there's no beautiful hinge. Again, watch Bobby Jones when the club swings back and then it just hinges so naturally at the top of the swing. And you know what? It's not flat. Like, you know, you're being told you've got to have this flat wrist. He's got a wrist that's more like this. There's
Cocked.
nothing wrong with that. So you're going to need a better range of motion in the wrists and you're going to need to be able to move your body in two directions.
Who is this book for?
It's for you. It's for all your friends that want to play better and who have invested a lot of time, effort, money in the game. And deep down, secretly inside, you think to yourself, I've spent a lot of money to not be good enough.
That's who it's for.
Yeah, I think that if I want to get better at guitar, playing guitar, easy. I'll go and get lessons from a really good guitar teacher and I'll sit there in front of him and I will learn how to play the guitar the way I want to play it. And then I'll practice properly and I'll do it until such times as I can, you know, strum the guitar, move my fingers up and down the fretboard without thinking too much about it and playing a song and then playing another song and another song. And I've got a very good mate who's a musician, and when I watch him, I mean, he can learn songs, Frank, and you know this. I'm sure you with your friends, your muso friends, they can learn songs so quickly, right? Like, because they don't have to think about the playing. They go, oh, it's that chord and it's this, and they just start playing it before you know it. Like, they'll play it. Well, you know, golfers do that too. When golfers get really good, they can experiment and be quite creative about it because they've learned how to do it. But I feel like all the poor suffering souls that are going to the driving range, that's why I call it Golf Factory, Frank. I've called it Golf Factory for years because see all these people lined up on rubber mats, smashing balls out into the driving range, and it's inputs and outputs. You know, in a factory, everything has got an input side and output side. And I see them go in and go through this motion of pounding balls off the and then going out the other side, go back to the car and going home and going, oh, got my golf practice done for the day. But you didn't.
Yeah, well, and then, you know, of course, you not only have the qualified teachers, then you have your buddies giving you tips, and then you read something and you see something, and you just have to sift through that information, which takes discipline and confidence to be able to decide what makes sense and what doesn't make sense.
It's just a lot of confused golfers, Frank, quite frankly. And they're everywhere. They're in Germany, they're everywhere in the world, mate. They're standing up there on the tee and they really don't, they're not able to just swing the club back and through without thinking about how to do it. I'm not saying it's everyone. There is a small percentage who can do that. But I would dearly love more to be able to do it. And when I finish my, you know, time up here in Southeast Asia and go home, the golf schools I'm going to run are going to be based on that. I'm not about BSing people, bullshitting people about the game. It's just a load of, you know, we don't need that anymore. Game's getting really expensive, and if we're really trying to grow the game, then golf's not doing a very good job of it, frankly.
And it's still the same game as it
Same
was.
game.
It's still
100 years, you know, if you just look at 100 years of instruction, right? Where it's been, yeah, it's been written about for much longer than that. But just look, go back to 1925. You know, there's been golf instructions come through. Golf driving ranges were invented. People started, instead of playing on the golf course where people used to go about it, you go on the golf course and you would go up to old Tom Morris and say, Tom, I want to go out and play 9 holes with you. Book him for the afternoon. Tom goes out. He'd probably go out for, let's say not nine, let's say 3 or 4 holes. And he teaches you how to play the game. And the driving ranges came along. Great. Driving ranges are great. You know, like what a great way to, you know, good money. You know, you get a popular driving range. You got a lot of people hitting balls, and it's a constant thing. It's a very good business, very good business model, but not necessarily a good learning model.
A good learning
And
model.
we need to have a key distinction there: the difference between the business of golf and the learning of golf, not the same thing.
Exactly. And this book, The No BS Guide to Buying a Better Golf Swing, cuts through the BS.
I hope so. I hope I've done a reasonable job of that, Frank. You know,
I will tell
there's.
you, you've done a fantastic job. It makes a perfect Christmas present for somebody that's covered in BS, but covered by BS, I should say.
It's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
But
14 euros on Amazon. Order it for yourself for a friend. Laura, you said to me before we started today that there's more coming, that you were, and I don't know if it's a secret, but that you plan on writing quite a bit more.
I've got it. Look, I've got a list of things I want to write. I've got a great story in me that starts in St. Andrews, you know, 300 400 years ago, and it ends up in Asia. And then they come back with some secrets from Asia that they introduce. And I've got all sorts of things going on in my head. The old pro, of course. I'd love to
Of
do
course.
something with the old pro eventually. So there's something there. I'm always thinking about stuff. If I'm not reading, I'm writing down stuff and thinking about, you know, potential books that I'd like to write and share with people.
And there really isn't, if you think about it. I mean, you know, there is fiction and quality fiction about history, about politics, about everything. But there really aren't many fiction books, good fiction books about sports. I mean, when I hear you talk about a story that starts 300 years ago in St. Andrews and finishes in Southeast Asia, I'm in. I am definitely.
I've got an outline already mapped out for that one. So that's somewhere along the way there. Because I love the metaphysical nature of golf as well, Frank, not just what's happening on the ground, but I just love what the I look at it like this. It's like the potentiality of golf. Not what's not not the reality of golf, the potentiality. Your listeners out there, you know, if you went and you said, you know what, from tomorrow, I'm going to cut all this horse shit out I've been doing about the way I've been approaching the game, and I'm going to go out there and I'm going to get so crystal clear on what I want from the game of golf. I'm going to find the golf teacher who will give me that, who'll show me how to get that. And I'm not doing anything until I can do that. Like it's up to you, Frank. It's not up to the golf teacher. It's up to you. You have to be the one that drives this. It has to be what you want. Not go to some famous teacher who thinks you should have this or
Right.
that, and you be happy with it. Oh my gosh, I'm so happy that I got the chance to be able to have lessons with this guy. You know, he charges, $1 million, but it's worth it. No, it's not worth it because it's not your goal. If your goal is to not, let's say, to not slice, whatever that means, and you slice and slice and slice, and you say, oh man, I've been to all the golf teachers and I still slice. Well, maybe, and you have the potential. So the potentiality part of this is the reality is I slice, but the potential is there could be a potential that exists somewhere where I don't slice anymore. There might even be a potential that exists that I can curve the ball from right to left as a right-handed golfer. But you're never going to manifest that destiny if you're not thinking about it all day long. If it's not the thing that's at top of mind for you as the golfer, Frank, not what the teacher thinks you should have. And I'm not saying that all teachers are like that.
Yeah, this is.
Because when you go to the lesson tee, they're probably going to say, what is it that I can do for you today?
Yeah.
And then you say something lame like, oh, you got to straighten my slice. That's not going to do it. That's not going to cut it. If you came to me, we're going to go, you know what? We need to go and sit down and have a cup of coffee because you're just not very clear about what it is you want. And so I'm going to dig it out of you until you, and then if I dig it out of you, you're not getting away from it. In other words, if that's what you want, then me as a coach, I'm going to make sure you get that. As long as you keep turning up, we're going to do that.
There you go. It's always fascinating to spend time with you, Laurie. And again, this book is super. I can't say it enough. And following you, and when I talk to people who know you, and the way they speak of you, and without exaggeration and without trying to blow smoke up somebody's ass, and they refer to you as one of the best in the world, you truly are. And
Oh, that's nice of you to say. I
thanks for
appreciate your time.
stopping by. Ladies and gentlemen, we will hear from Laurie at the latest with his next book, but
You
take a
definitely
look at
will.
this one first. Laurie, we'll get you to bed early. We know you're an early riser at 4:30 a.m., so it's time for you to hit the hay in Indonesia. All the best to you and the family and to your kids that you teach there. Ladies and gentlemen, that was it. To the Lynx Land.